Welcome to Luma Digest. I'm Noura. Right. So this week I kept noticing a theme running through everything. It's not about replacing humans anymore. It's about building tools that humans actually want to work alongside. And that sounds simple, but it's quietly radical when you look at what's actually happening. Let's start with robots. Robust.ai quote SCEO Anthony Jules is speaking at the Robotics Summit next month. And the topic isn't what you'd expect from a robotics company. It's not about speed or cost savings or how many workers you can replace. It's about designing warehouse robots that people actually enjoy working with. Think about that for a second. Most automation conversations skip straight past the humans, but Jules is asking the question nobody else wants to touch. What makes workers want to use your robot? And here's why that matters. Most automation failures don't happen because the technology doesn't work. They happen because workers resent it. You roll out these expensive systems, and people find ways to work around them, or they use them grudgingly. Or they quietly sabotage them. So Robust built Carter, their mobile robot, around a completely different principle. It's designed to work with warehouse staff on picking and put away tasks, not instead of them, with them. The focus is on reducing physical strain, integrating with infrastructure that's already there, not forcing expensive overhauls, and making the robot feel like a partner rather than a replacement that's coming for your job. This is human-centered automation. And the companies that figure this out are going to win. The ones that don't are going to watch very expensive robots gather dust in the corner. The takeaway? If your automation strategy doesn't start with the people using it, you're designing for failure. Worth thinking about for anyone building tools meant to augment human work. Okay, so, completely different corner of the tech world now. Sebastian Raschke published something this week that properly surprised me. It's a breakdown of how coding agents actually work. Not the hype version, the real architecture. When you use Claude Code or Cursor, you're not just talking to a model, you're using a sophisticated system with six core components working together: live repo context, prompt caching, structured tool use, context reduction, session memory, and bounded delegation. And here's the bit that really stood out to me. Most of the apparent intelligence of these systems doesn't come from the model itself. It comes from the harness around the model. The harness is what manages context, keeps the right files in scope, prevents the model from hallucinating complete nonsense, and makes sure it doesn't wander off into irrelevant tangents. A good harness can make a mid-tier model outperform a more powerful one running raw. So if you're building with AI, you're not just choosing a model, you're building a system around it. The prompt design, the context management, the tool integration, all of that matters as much as the model you picked. And honestly, this is where most teams are getting it wrong. They're spending all their time model shopping and none of their time on the architecture that makes the model useful. The teams that figure this out are shipping faster and more reliably than everyone else. And the gap is widening, something to think about if you're building anything with LLMs right now. Right, let me shift gears for a second. Azeem Azar dropped something in Exponential View this week that made me stop and reread it twice. The AI labs are rationing, not because demand is soft, because they don't have enough compute to meet it. OpenAI's CFO confirmed it publicly. Anthropic quietly tightened their rate limits, and H100 prices just hit an 18-month high. This is not a hype problem, this is a scarcity problem. For the last 2 years, the narrative has been that AI is moving faster than anyone can keep up with, models getting bigger, capabilities expanding, everyone racing to scale. But now, the labs are turning business away, not because they don't want it, because they literally can't serve it. And that changes the game. It means the bottleneck isn't ideas or applications anymore. It's hardware. If you're building on someone else's API, you're building on someone else's capacity constraints. And when compute is scarce, prices go up, access gets rationed, the biggest customers get priority, and everyone else gets throttled. So what does this mean for builders? Well, if you're running a business that depends on API access, you need a backup plan, because rate limits aren't going away. And if compute stays tight, the labs will keep prioritizing their biggest customers. This is also why local models and edge deployment are suddenly looking a lot more attractive. If you can run inference on device, you're not competing for compute anymore. The takeaway? The AI infrastructure you rely on is more fragile than it looks. And the labs are telling you that, if you're paying attention. Have a think about what your contingency plan looks like if your API costs triple or your rate limits get cut in half. All right, one more. Jack Clark's Import AI this week covered something I found genuinely fascinating. It's about Google's approach to AI alignment. Most alignment work focuses on making a single system safe. You train the model, you add guardrails, you test it, you hope it behaves. But Google is arguing that the future isn't about aligning one big model. It's about managing ecosystems of agents. Think of it as a society of minds, multiple AI systems, each with different goals and capabilities, interacting with each other. And the alignment problem becomes about how those systems cooperate, compete, and check each other. It's a completely different framing. And honestly, it makes sense when you think about where we're headed. We're not building one superintelligent system that does everything. We're building lots of specialized agents that talk to each other. Your coding assistant, your research assistant, your scheduling assistant, your email assistant, all of them running in parallel, all of them with access to different parts of your data. And the question isn't just, is each one safe? It's, what happens when they interact? What happens when one agent's goal conflicts with another's? Who arbitrates? We don't have good answers yet. But the question itself is worth sitting with. Because if Google's right, and I think they might be, then alignment isn't a one-time problem you solve before deployment. It's an ongoing management problem, and we're going to need new tools and frameworks for it, something to keep an eye on. So, stepping back from all of that, here's what I keep coming back to. This week's stories are all about the gap between what's technically possible and what actually works in the real world. Robots that people want to work with, AI systems that need smart harnesses to be useful, labs that can't meet demand, and alignment strategies that assume cooperation between multiple agents instead of control over one. The common thread, the hard part isn't the technology, it's the system around it, the infrastructure, the incentives, the humans, and the teams that figure that out are going to be the ones still shipping when everyone else is stuck troubleshooting. Worth thinking about as you plan your next build. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. Links in the show notes.